Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. On today's show, does Dak Prescott deserve a huge payday from the Cowboys? Plus, Chris Broussard and Michael Rappaport join the show to talk the NBA MVP race, LeBron's Lakers, and plenty more. And is Zion Williamson a lock to be a dominant force at the next level? We've got a busy show today. Let's get to it. Dak Prescott has helped lead the Cowboys to 2 playoff appearances in his first 3 seasons, but he's entering the final year of his contract. The Athletic says Dak's upcoming contract talks are the, quote, largest contract quandary in Cowboys history. They say Dak could play this year under his current deal, then be franchise tagged for over $27 million the following year to see if he's worthy of a deal that could reach $200 million. Rob Parker is back with us. So, Rob, would you give Dak the big contract?
Skip, this is pretty easy for me.
Yeah.
No way, no how, not now.
You added that?
You like that? For Dak. No way, no how, not now. And my problem is, I need to see more. That's all. Just show me more. I thought he was going to take a next step level, right, this year. Mm-hmm. Got Ezekiel back. That wasn't like year 2, Skip, with the suspension and your, you know, makeshift in the team and trying to make it all work. But no, it didn't happen. Yes, they won a division. They got a break in the NFC.
I'm not going to ignore it. They won a playoff game. No big deal. Forget about that because that's irrelevant. Go ahead.
That's not what I'm saying. But when you take a look at him, I just still have question marks. Is it Dak? For him to win, you need everything to go right. I mean, you got to have the defense has to be good. Ezekiel Elliott has to rush for 100 yards. His numbers, Skip, especially throwing down the field, aren't great. Let me give you some numbers. You ready? This is for you. As far as quarterbacks throwing under 200 yards in a game, he's done it 17 times in his career, tied for third. I'm talking about since he's been in the league. The same as Blake Bortles. Blake Bortles. Let me see. He got cashed out. 3 years, $54 million. That's about right. And this year, for all the praise, and they won the division, and Dak was so great, they got shut out by the Colts. Remember that this year, Skip? First time the Cowboys got shut out in 15 years.
Wasn't his fault. Go ahead.
And you know it's not the quarterback's fault when you don't score any points?
He played really well in the first half.
So did he play well in the second half, too? I'm just saying. I'm just giving you these things. Here's the bigger one that I would be afraid of if I'm a Cowboys fan. He can't win you a game on his own. And I'm talking about when Ezekiel Elliott has under 75 yards. Jenny, you ready for this?
What?
Don't tell Jenny, tell me.
I'm not, listen, because you don't want to hear the numbers. I'm making sure
I'm interested.
Because she's an objective observer. You don't want to hear the numbers I have.
Very objective.
They're 0-6, including the playoffs, 0-7. So they don't win any games when he doesn't rush for over 75 yards. He doesn't have to have 100 yards or 200 yards. 75 yards. And I look at the other one, Skip, you're so big on is QBR. Right? That's the Bible for you. QBR, you're always ripping on Aaron Rodgers. QBR is what it is. Dak Prescott was third his rookie year in the league.
He was unbelievable the whole year until the last game, and they mailed it in. Go ahead. Okay, he should have won. Go ahead.
But he was third.
Yeah.
Okay. Last year, 17th QBR.
Okay, well, you skipped the middle year when he was fourth.
No, I'm going.
So he went third, fourth,
so
17th.
He's going. He's dropping like a rock.
So he's
averaged
finishing eighth in
QBR.
Is that a top
10 quarterback? That's not how we do it. We'd go on where he is, just like if he would have started 17.
Okay, tell me when it's my turn.
If it's not your turn yet, you're going to take more of this medicine, and you're going to like it. He's no better than a Mark Sanchez when you look at quarterbacks. And I'll make the case that Mark Sanchez is actually, it's the same kind of thing when you look at Mark Sanchez's career. He had a great defense with that Jets team with Rex Ryan. Remember that, Skip? They ran the football really well, had a great defense. Do you remember that year, 2010? Sanchez, first of all, has 4 playoff wins under his belt in his career. And in 2010, he beat Peyton Manning and Tom Brady on the road, on the road en route to the AFC Championship
game. He did.
And my only point is, a lot of guys can do what Dak Prescott has done. He's not special. He's not a guy that can win a game when you're in a tight spot and your running game's not running, just like we saw in the playoffs against Dallas. When Dak was bottled up, Ezekiel was bottled up and couldn't get any yards, that game was over. And don't let the score fool you. It wasn't as close as it was. I'm telling you, he's not that special. I need to see more before I back up the Brink truck for Dak Prescott. Mm.
You know what's sad about everything you said?
I
believe the majority of those watching this show right now are with you on all that you just said, thanks to Steve Owens, your researcher.
No, wait a minute. Time out.
Yeah.
Why are you keep bringing up Steve Owens?
Yeah, okay. Just
Steve
doing his
is doing his job. You he's think that I'm, I don't have any knowledge?
Yeah. You're just
this is unbelievable.
I didn't say that.
I see. This is your handwriting.
This is my handwriting.
Let's give Rob some credit here.
Sad but true that most people are on your side with this. And that's why in this block, we are about to deal with the two phenomena in sports that most astound and confound me. And that is, number one, Dak hate, and number two, Brady hate. And we're about to talk about Brady hate. And again, if you hate either by, and again,
the, hate's a strong word.
Hate's
Would
a strong
word.
But with Dak, it's more hate his performance or lack thereof in most people's eyes, because he doesn't measure up to what some people see as the franchise quarterback as far as throwing the football, right?
Okay.
And Brady hates a whole nother phenomenon, singular, that we'll discuss in just a second. Although, to me, Dak Prescott is Brady-esque in the way he operates, because Tom Brady doesn't always put up big numbers. He just wins games, which brings me to why I would right here, right now, if I were Jerry Jones tomorrow, in fact, I hope he's negotiating as we speak, I would go ahead and give Dak Prescott 5 years, and I'll just throw out $100 million, and I would guarantee every last nickel of it, because he has earned it. He has earned my trust, my belief. I am 1,000% sold on Dak Prescott as the face of the franchise, leader of the Dallas Cowboys, who could win. He's capable of taking them and winning multiple Super Bowls. Brady-esque. Let's start with his health. You realize he's been 1,000% healthy through all 3 years, hasn't missed a game, and he's only 25 years of age. And Rob Parker, would you believe that over his first 3 years, he set the all-time passing completion percentage record for the first 3 years in the league? Nobody, no quarterback, not Joe Montana, not Tom Brady, not Peyton Manning, not Dan Marino, completed a higher percentage of passes in his first 3 years than Dak just did. 66.3% was his completion rate.
Is that passes of 3 yards or less? Is that what it is?
Is it accuracy? Deadly accuracy?
Is it that? Or they had him on a string skip?
Okay.
You know the offensive coordinator. They wouldn't even let him throw the ball down the field. They guarded him.
That is so wrong. It's my turn right now. So also, his 32 wins, Dak's 32 wins over the first 3 years, second only to Tom Brady. Is that pretty good company to be in? I would say that's pretty good. Dak Prescott now has over 3 years, 14 game-winning drives. Guess what, boys and girls? That leads the National Football League. No quarterback over the last 3 years, not Aaron Rodgers, not Andrew Luck, not whoever else you like. Nobody has had more than 14 game-winning drives. Dak Prescott's.
That's because their teams were ahead. They didn't have to come from behind because their quarterback scored points early.
Okay. And once, about midseason, that Jerry Jones, thank you, God bless you, Jerry Jones, went out and finally acquired a bona fide number one genuine primary target wide receiver in Amari Cooper, all of a sudden Dak Prescott started to look better and better and really good, because against Philadelphia, with the division at stake, this was for the NFC East at Jerry World, Dak Prescott in the fourth quarter and overtime of that game threw for 243 yards. He went 17 of 20, three touchdowns and pull them back into the game and overcame Carson Wentz. All I hear on this show from Shannon Sharp is Carson Wentz is the best quarterback in the NFC East. And I believe that Dak Prescott proved this year he's the best quarterback in the NFC East. And if we can talk about intangibles, about leadership, you actually dared to taint Dak Prescott by putting him in the same sentence with Mark Sanchez?
Mark Sanchez has four road playoff wins, Skip.
Mark Sanchez
Call me when Dak gets four.
Yeah, hey, Mark Sanchez, call me when Dak has a defense like that Rex Ryan defense with, remember, Darrell Revis in that group?
Did he
that,
not beat Brady and Peyton Manning? Do you remember that?
Yeah. Mark Sanchez has low to no what I call football backbone. You know this, and I know this. Low intangibles, not the face of the franchise, can't be trusted under the highest pressure because in those games, he's mostly handing off and relying on the defense. He is game managing. Dak does not game manage. And if they let Kellen Moore call the plays next year, you'll finally see Dak unleashed as the runner he can be because the playmaker on this team is not Ezekiel Elliott. The playmaker, both throwing it and running it, is actually the quarterback because the quarterback will take over games with his legs. He closed the deal against Seattle because they were in a dark place. It was 3rd-and-14, and they were only up 3 points with 2:33 left in the Seattle playoff game at Jerry World. And I don't know if we have that handy, but I would love to see this run again because they called the basic quarterback draw, and finally Linehan
made
a good call.
This was a setup.
Yeah, up. Jenny. No, you missed. And look at that. You want to talk about athletic? This man weighs 245 pounds. And
that was a bad play defensively. How do you let a guy rush for that many yards in that situation?
Yeah, I see that play in my dreams sometimes because I want to see more of that play in
my
dreams.
Jenny, you know what? Yeah. Skip says that. You know what I see in my dreams? The day on Instagram, you went and you threw your Dak Prescott jersey in the garbage.
I threw my hat in the garbage.
And your Dak Prescott jersey, told me all I needed to know.
And what happened?
Was there $100 million in the garbage can, too?
But what
you
got far more likes on Instagram was when, 2 weeks later, I went and retrieved it out of the garbage. And then there was another point where I did another video where I actually ran into the kitchen and I was ready to throw it in the garbage, but I heard, oh, it's the Philly game. And I heard, oh, he's doing that. I'm going to run back because I am a crazed fan. I'm completely psycho. My wife will, you know Ernestine very well. She will be the first to tell you I'm out of my mind while they are playing. I'm knee-jerk, over-emotional, over-reactionary. But when I step back and cool down and look at the big picture of Dak Prescott, I am completely sold on Dak Prescott. Because all he did from that point, that team hit bottom that Monday night. I didn't see it coming. Tennessee visited Jerry World, and it was the all-time
disaster.
Dallas Cowboy disaster.
And
all-time.
And the all-time, one of the all-time Cowboys came
what
out.
What did Mariota, Marcus Mariota went 11 of 14 on third down that night?
Do you remember Troy Aikman after that said this whole thing needs to be blown up?
Yeah, he said that. He did. He said it was, I think, basically dysfunctional. And yet, I think a lot of people were saying it was dysfunctional at that point, including me. And yet, Dak Prescott pulled it all back together. And remember, Amari had just arrived that week before that night. And they went to Philly the next week, Rob. And what happened? Dak Prescott took over that game. Dak Prescott led them to yet another division title. So he's won 2 of 3 years he's won the division title. That's pretty good, wouldn't you say? And all he did against Aaron Rodgers was throw for 300 yards in that playoff game and 3 touchdowns.
Did they win that game?
No, but that was because of Mason Crosbar, who you blame him for losing the games this year, and I credit him with pulling that game out with a 56-yard field goal and a 51-yard field goal, neither of which seemed to have any shot at going over the crossbar, but they both did, and I don't know how they did. But the point is that Dak Prescott has played Aaron Rodgers 3 times. Go look up the numbers. Ask Steve Owens in the break to go look up these numbers because
I can look them up myself. Okay,
look at what he did to Aaron Rodgers all 3 times. He outplayed him. Head to head, he outplayed the best thrower of the football ever. Just check it out. I'm sold. He's earned his money. I will be very content. I will never again throw away my Dak Prescott jersey.
At least he admits, though, Rob, that he's a little bit crazy when it comes to
he
all
is
man.
Crazy.
He admits it. You know, you've seen it. We've all seen the Instagram. No mercy.
Hey guys, Jenny Taft here with a quick word from Simply Safe. Here's something interesting. Studies show that security systems deter burglars. It's a fact, but there's still a burglary every 8 seconds in America. How? Well, think about it. Do burglars give up just because some houses have security systems? Of course not. They just find a house that isn't protected. That's why securing your home is truly a necessity. So let me recommend this brilliant security system built by my friends at Simply Safe. Simply Safe believes fear has no place in a place like home, so they made their system ridiculously smart. Simply Safe sensors will protect every point of access to your home, doors, windows, garage, you name it. If a burglar even tries to break in, an ear-shattering siren will let them know the police are already on the way. Best of all, Simply Safe's 24/7 monitoring is just $14.99 a month. And they'll never lock you in a long-term contract. More than 3 million people already know it feels good to fear less with Simply Safe. So go with the only home security I trust, Simply Safe, by going to simplysafe.com/undisputed today. That's simplysafe.com/undisputed for the home security I trust. simplysafe.com/undisputed. Now, back to the show. No
mercy. Some Tom Brady hate, because on the outside, and Rob, you keep reminding us that people don't buy it, but we keep hearing how much Brady is loved on the inside. And now here's an example from offensive lineman Trent Brown, who just finished his first season with Brady, and he gave his quarterback high praise on Adam Schefter's podcast, saying Brady is, quote, one of the coolest guys I've ever met in my life. And that's no BS by any stretch of the imagination. Rob, we feel the Brady hate coming
no
from
Brady
this
hate.
Way. Does this change your mind at all?
Not at all. Gee whiz, aw shucks. Oh, that Tom Brady. Dude, what is he supposed to say? Trent Brown's looking for a job. What is he supposed to say, Skip?
He's going to really... at least he's not a Patriot anymore.
Well,
right?
But I'm just saying, but he's looking for a job. He's going to rip Tom Brady after they won the Super Bowl?
He could.
No, he wouldn't do it.
He could say, I want to expose Tom Brady. He's a fraud. No one's ever said that.
After he gets a job, maybe, or a new contract that's completely guaranteed, and I don't expect him to say that. Winning is the ultimate makeup in sports, right? When you win, it covers up everything. Nobody cares about... what kind of guy you are and all that, if you can win. So I'd never expect anybody to come out and just rip Tom Brady just for the sake of it. He's won too much, been involved, been lucky his whole career. A lot of things have gone his way. So why in the world would you have anything bad to say about Tom Brady? That doesn't mean he's perfect or a choir boy. I get it. But this is supposed to convince me because a guy comes and plays 1 year with Tom Brady and is out of work? What is he supposed to say? I'm not expecting anything else. Tom Brady, he is who we know he is, Skip.
Which is what?
Which is oftentimes not convincing.
Like insincere? Like not genuine?
Not genuine.
Like fake fraud? Is that what you're going?
Fraud might be a strong word, but
because
not...
Because why? Oh, Jolly Whiz? That guy? You don't like him?
Yes, because we've seen moments where Tom Brady acts as if he doesn't know what's going on. It's all about football. And don't you remember, even with the kneeling, Skip, when he claimed that he didn't know what was going on? Do you remember that, Skip? Would you call that genuine? Mm-hmm. It's a league epidemic was going on, and Tom Brady looked straight in the camera and went, what's going on? I don't know anything that's happening. When they asked Tom Brady, Alexander from NBC News asked him point blank, is Tom Brady a cheater? He went... I don't think so. Is that genuine?
Yeah.
No, it's not. Tom Brady could have said, no, I'm not a cheater. Yes, I asked the ball boys to let the air out of the ball. So when I see those kind of things, I got to question whether or not the guy is totally 100% or all the way up front. I'm not convinced of that. And does he treat his teammates well? Why shouldn't he? He just won a Super Bowl where he didn't throw a touchdown. I'd be psyched. I'd be all about my teammates. They just gave him a parting gift. A gift-wrapped Super Bowl where Tom Brady had no touchdowns, One interception and a fumble. Do you remember that, Skip?
Who made the throw of the game?
Wait
the
a minute.
The signature play of the game.
Was that it?
No, what was it?
No, it was Gronk.
What broke the game over?
Gronk made a great throw on a great catch on an inaccurate throw.
Oh, really? Hit him right there? I don't know. Maybe I saw a different game.
If Brady would have thrown the ball on the money, Gronk could have gotten to the end zone without having to dive for it. No?
I saw him drop it right down the chimney between three defenders who were closing on the ball. It was one of the greatest throws I've ever seen in a Super Bowl game.
Skip, you have to admit that there's some phoniness to Tom Brady. Just admit there's some.
I will admit there is zero phoniness to Tom Brady. And the reason I can say that with 1,000% conviction is at ESPN, I worked with a whole bunch of ex-Brady teammates. And trust me on this, from the bottom of my heart, I never heard one of them say one negative thing off the record or even off camera about Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. We have James Harrison as a contributor here on Undisputed. James Harrison is as tough and real a human as I have ever encountered in all my years in this business or in covering sports. He is 1,000% keep it real. Mm-hmm. And he readily admitted this year on Undisputed that last year when he got signed by New England late in the year, he went into that locker room with his BS detector on high because he was looking for fraud. He was looking for phony. And he said 2 weeks in, he finally walked up to Brady, who was getting his ankles taped, and he said, hey, I just want you to know, and I'm paraphrasing how James said it, but he said to Tom, I got to give it up to you because you're completely real. Because that's who he is. He is aw shucks, gee whiz. And he's not going to take stances publicly on big social justice issues.
You don't
have
to take stances, okay? Skip. You have to acknowledge it that something's going on in your league. Can you at least give me that?
Did Michael Jordan ever acknowledge anything?
Michael Jordan was ripped for that, too, during his career. Yes or not? Yes or no?
Tom Brady just wants to win Super Bowls. He doesn't care about making statements.
I'm not asking him to make a stance. I'm asking him for acknowledging what's going on in front of him. That's all.
Okay. So if you listen to his teammates at the Super Bowl, because they all get interviewed, the 53rd guy on the roster is always saying, gee, that they've all got stories. The 51st, 2nd, and 3rd guy have stories about how the first day they got called up from the practice squad, that Tom Brady walked over to them in the locker room and said, hi, I'm Tom Brady. And their reaction is always, as if I didn't know you were Tom Brady, right? And that Tom Brady treated them like an equal. And I think it comes straight from his heart. And I believe he is the greatest leader in the history of sports because he's kept that team together through all kinds of friction with his head coach, who I think is jealous of him and resentful of him and tried to get rid of him a year and a half ago at the trade deadline, and to be able to unify that locker room and keep everybody focused on one goal and one goal only, and that's to go win yet another championship, that makes him the greatest leader. And he's obviously the greatest clutch player in the history of sports because he's had so many chances. Now he's won 6 rings with 6 game-winning drives in the fourth quarter overtime. That's preposterously great.
He won 2 Super Bowls and threw 1 touchdown in 2 of those Super Bowls.
All right, but he did it, Rob, against really good defenses at the highest level under the most pressure. He just keeps on doing it again and again. At 41, he just went out and beat Wade Phillips in a loaded defense with a lot of firepower coming off the edges and at cornerback. That was a loaded defense, and Wade Phillips
was so
really good.
They gave the MVP to a wide receiver who didn't even score a touchdown in the game.
So
how
did Tom Brady crack the code on Wade Phillips' defense?
One touchdown is cracking the code? Is that
it? Think who he's throwing to. Broken down Gronkowski, Julian Edelman coming off complete knee reconstruction at age 32, and Chris Hogan? Chris Hogan, who's now, 33
Skip,
years
you
old?
You act like Chris Hogan was working at 7-Eleven the night before the Super Bowl.
Guess who the fourth receiver in the Super Bowl was, who got split out wide in that last code-cracking drive? Rex Burkhead. So Tom Brady is thrown to four white guys, two of them almost over the hill, right? Am I right?
Well, white guys can't play football since when?
That's what I was here. Not at wide receivers. So those are your four white. Who would do that? Tom Brady went into these playoffs with the worst receiving core of all the playoff teams. Wouldn't you agree with that? Sure they did. Who wouldn't agree with that? And he pulled it off again. Leadership, clutch playmaking. That's how he did it. The throws he made in overtime at Kansas City were spectacularly special. I'm honored just to watch him, and I don't even know him. I've never met him. I don't care. But there's something deeper, and again, I'm going to give you credit for this because I think you're in the vast majority on this, in part because people are just sick and tired of Tom Brady, and I completely get that. But there's something deeper, and I think it went back to September of 2015 when the media noted that Tom Brady had a Make America Great Again hat in his locker. That was, a year and a month before the election, right? And once that man got elected, Tom Brady began to distance himself from that man to the point that after they won the Super Bowl against Atlanta, he wouldn't go to the White House. And President Trump was reportedly outraged over this and tried to make it right, tried to figure out why is this? Why is he distancing himself from me? Mm-hmm. Well, now the owner of this football team readily publicly admits he just might be Donald Trump's closest friend in the world. But the owner seems to somehow get a pass because the owner hangs out with Meek Mill and Elton John and a lot of far left wing, obviously,
right.
A lot of entertainers.
Sure.
But again, Tom Brady is condemned over this. I think it still resonates. It seems like it resonates some with you, like he's hidden it or something.
No, just from the standpoint, just that at the time, if you had that hat in and you have all these pictures of you playing golf with him, you can't act like you don't know him all of a sudden.
I think that's just an acknowledgement.
I played golf with him.
But Brady was quoted, I don't care about his politics. Okay, Brady was quoted in the Boston Globe. This is going back a year and a month before the election. He said, he's a lot of fun to play golf with. And I think he played golf with him several times. Tiger Woods lately is playing golf with him, right? And he was just saying he's a great golf partner. But I think once Tom started seeing politically what he became, then Tom, I'm out. Okay?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I understand, though. I understand why you want him to acknowledge
That's all. Just acknowledge it.
Something. But at the same time, you said he wants to win rings.
I'm so mad at
and that's
you
what he's
about
doing.
This debate that I'm going to return my Uggs when I get off the show.
Oh, really? You're not an Ugg guy anymore?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm
on that note. On
I can't return mine because Ernestine gave them to me
for
Christmas.
Oh, you better not. Yeah.
I mean, they're pretty nice. No mercy. Well, the Lakers season has not gone as planned. They're currently three games out of the eighth seed in the West with 25 games left in the season. And the Lakers still have 15 games against teams with a winning record. We're joined by our friend Michael Rappaport, host of the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast. Mm-hmm. Michael, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, simple question, how far will the Lakers go this year?
They're going to get bumped out of the first round of the playoffs.
But they are in the playoffs.
I believe the Lakers will make it to the playoffs. I believe that LeBron will empty the tank. I think the young players, the Kuzma and those guys, will step up to the plate. It won't be easy, and it'll be almost that playoff run intensity. If LeBron is on the floor, we don't know about his groin. But if he's on the floor, I believe the Lakers will make it to the playoffs. And if they're in the seventh seed or the eighth seed, which I think they'll be in the eighth seed, they're getting bumped out of the first round. This season is a wash. And I feel like LeBron James is preparing for this. He's been preparing for it since he made the statement, which you guys talked about, but I feel like it should have gotten more attention, mm-hmm. when he said, I don't need to chase anything else on the basketball court. And in my opinion, it's time to start thinking about retirement. Mm. Okay, because you want to go out on top. The injuries are going to continue to come, and I don't wish that on any player. Mm. I want to be clear on that. I don't wish that on any athlete. Okay. The injuries are going to continue to come because, as we all know, Father Time is undefeated. Mm-hmm. This didn't go the way he planned on doing it. I don't think Anthony Davis is coming to the Lakers this offseason. I don't think any of these big-name guys are coming to the Lakers because, as the great Kevin Durant said, it's toxic being around mm-hmm. LeBron.
Yep.
The environment, it's chaotic.
It is.
This season was chaotic. And he's been able to will, push, talent, and quote-unquote goat himself into championships, into winning championships. That's over. That's over. He can like Father Time can only deal with so much. Hmm. And I feel like at this point, my prediction, he's not gonna make it to the fourth year of his contract with the Lakers.
Okay.
He's gonna either retire or his body's gonna break down. And I wanna be clear, I don't wish that on any athlete.
Okay,
but that's
so you're gonna say LeBron James is retiring at 37?
LeBron James is gonna retire in 2 years.
Ooh, that'd be 36.
Yeah.
Right?
Two more seasons. Okay. I think he's going to have to, because he's not going to want to not be. It's like Michael Jordan. We need him to be that. And also, listen, he's making TV shows. He's making movies. And now he's Quincy Jones. Right. He's producing a record. And he's doing this during the regular season.
He just announced Space Jam 2 is going to shoot in the off this summer.
It's weird that he's going to star in Space Jam 2, because when Michael Jordan did it, he was at the peak, and LeBron James is at the fall of his career. Ooh.
Well, LeBron will have plenty of time to shoot that, because he won't make the playoffs.
They can start shooting early.
They can start shooting early. Michael, I hear you, and you're like most people. You expect LeBron James to turn on some magic switch, and because of the history of him always making the playoffs and the finals out of the East, yes, I understand why you think that he's still going to make it. Everybody wants to write the script that the Kings, who have played well all year, are going to fold up at the end.
They're not.
And people are saying, well, the Clippers are trying to hold on to their pick, so they're going to lose games on purpose at the end because they won't. But they went to Boston, came back from a 28. This is a team that supposedly is tanking. And they won a game. They were down 28 on the road to Boston. So maybe the organization would like them to tank, but I'm not so sure that the players are going to buy into that and that. Here's the other part. 25 games to go. Everybody expects the Lakers to be something they haven't been all year, which is 15 games, as you mentioned, Jenny, against teams over 500.
Yep.
They're 12-19 against teams over 500. And I'll tell you, if they don't get it done and put themselves in position before the last 20 games, the last five games of the season are all against teams that are currently in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So you can't wait till the end thinking you're going to win if you don't do it before that.
Got to start tomorrow versus the Houston Rockets.
Absolutely, and you got to win some of those games that you're not expected to win. To think that you're going to beat the Pelicans all three games. We saw what the Pelicans did to OKC in New Orleans without Anthony Davis. He was at the hospital getting an MRI, and they beat OKC, which was hot, Skip, right? On a great streak.
They were on a great streak.
Here's the other part no one talks about. The Minnesota Timberwolves are one game behind the Lakers.
True.
They're going to be in the mix. They haven't gone away. So you're talking about the other two teams who are in front of them. They better watch out if the Minnesota Timberwolves are going to get there. And I know everybody's waiting for Lonzo Ball to come and wave his magic wand. And
we don't
Chris
have
Bouchard
a wand.
Says that he's the defensive guy that's going to turn everything. I'm just not buying it because LeBron, Skip, and Michael, he doesn't play defense. And if he's not, whether he's healthy enough to play defense or doesn't want to play defense or whatever it is, they won't be able to accomplish what they need to do. They have to win at a higher rate. The last time they won more than three games in a row dates back to early December. Mm. They haven't put together the string that everybody tell me, oh, they'll run off four or five in a row. They haven't been doing it all year. So why do I believe that now, all of a sudden, they're going to turn some switch on with these players who I don't know for sure have even forgiving LeBron for wanting to package them all up and send them to New Orleans because he doesn't believe that he can win with them.
Yep.
So when you add all of those factors up, add that Luke Walton isn't LeBron's favorite and that's been thrown out there, this is a mess. I don't believe that they're going to make the playoffs. I really believe it won't be good for everybody, won't be good for the NBA, won't be good for TV ratings, won't be good for our show.
It will not.
It will not. I give you that, but I don't believe they're going to make it, Skip.
I have to say, let you go, as far as it won't be good for the NBA, won't be good, maybe it won't be good for the ratings, it will be good for the NBA because the NBA needs to start preparing for life after LeBron. There's so many great players in this league that we don't talk about on all the teams.
I agree
so many
with
young
that.
Players, and at a certain point, we're going to have to cut the cord. If they don't make the NBA playoffs, yes, it stinks. But there's plenty of things to talk about. There's plenty of Dame Dollars. There's plenty of Paul George. There's plenty of Giannis's. There's plenty of Toronto's.
But Michael, when he came to Los Angeles, if you would have told anybody he wouldn't make the playoffs his first year, nobody would buy it.
I agree.
Thank you for bringing that point up, because that's my first point off your point. You're saying that the Kings will beat out the King for the eighth playoff spot, right?
Yikes.
The Sacramento Kings will eliminate LeBron James's Los Angeles Lakers.
Plural singular.
Think about what you're saying. Think about the magnitude and the impact of that. Think about the taint on LeBron's legacy if, in fact, in his first go-round with the Lakers, even though he missed X games with the groin injury, that they failed to make the playoffs. Now, I disagree. I'm with you on this. I think they'll make the eight spot. And the reason I think that, and I know I am occasionally critical of LeBron James because I'm objective about LeBron James, as you are. You're objective about LeBron James. You're very objective about LeBron James. But I'm going to be positively objective. I saw enough through Christmas Day. I saw them get to 20 and 14. I saw LeBron James leave five or six games on the table in those first 34.
I agree with
that
you.
That he should have closed. Like, here, LeBron, silver platter,
and we talked about a skip that those games would come back to haunt them.
Remember,
that they didn't get early on that LeBron could have won.
The Houston game at home early when they had the fight with
Brandon
They choked
Ingram.
That game down.
Well, he choked it down at the end. And then the San Antonio game at home, he choked that game down at the end. And I can go all the way to there were all kinds of games through that first stretch. And yet I would see during the game stretches where I'd say, you know what? This team's better than I thought it would be. And as Kyle Kuzma has grown up before your very eyes, I think he is becoming the closer for this team. He trusts LeBron, as in LeBron's going to feed me the sugar, you know, pass me the rock right on time, right in my shooting pocket. And when LeBron passes me the ball, I feel really good about shooting it and making it from 30 feet. So I think Kuzma will start to carry them. Brandon Ingram's had some good stretches. Lonzo will come back. It's not like whether you like him or not, he won't hurt them. He will help them because he can defend. LeBron played less defense last year than he's playing right now. Trust me on this. He played one-man zone through the playoffs last year. He against Indiana in that playoff series, he would just go stand in the lane. His guy would be out shooting threes on the perimeter. He'd just be under because he's got to rest on defense. And my man Shannon Sharp would sit there and say, well, he's in his 15th year. You got to give him a break because he needs to rest. Well, that's to your point. Father Time is starting to tap him on the shoulder. And now, for the first time in his life, his NBA life, he's got an injury. It's not a joint issue like a knee or a shoulder or Achilles tendon. But, well, I shouldn't put the Achilles as a joint. But again, it's a soft tissue injury. It's a pull. Well, LeBron James doesn't pull muscles, I didn't think. And again, I hark back to that tweet of December 26th when he said, dodged a bullet, back in no time. No. Not back in no time. And now there are reports that he's still favoring the groin. I didn't see it in the All-Star game. I think he'll be just fine.
Here's the one little thing. Mm-hmm. When they lost that game to Atlanta where he had a triple-double and played well, played 43
okay,
minutes.
Again,
but if he had the numbers,
quarter,
but my point
he's
is,
not,
post-injury.
Yeah, that's a game you got to win, Skip.
Hey,
and that's the one that if you're a Laker fan, you look at it and go, how did they lose this? And there's a chance they could lose more.
I thought the Philly game, I wanted LeBron to engage in the second half. Like, what are you doing? He was sort of going Lonzo Ball. Like, I'm not part of this tonight. Really?
I think after last season's playoffs, where everyone can agree, he was just so incredible. Mm-hmm. And I came on this show when the season started, and I said I thought they would make it to the Western Conference Finals via of what we saw last year. I mean, that, even though it was the East, you're like, yo, this guy's going to – and they did a bank robbery. He did a one-man bank robbery in the first game of the Finals versus the Warriors, and J.R. Smith screwed up. You'd like, well, he's going to be able to at least will them. But I think that
– I thought LeBron screwed up.
He did, passing the ball to George Hill. Yeah. He would have been better off passing to Benny Hill.
Benny Hill.
Somebody missed a free throw.
Who remembers Benny Hill except Rob Parker?
Us three.
No one forgets around here.
The fact of the matter is that I this has gone way worse than I thought, and I think anyone could have predicted. And I think that unless he could pull it off. It's like betting against Brady.
But it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, he's below 500 for the first time since his rookie year at the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. So this is a low for him. This is a big challenge to
and
get
even
back to the
Vegas
playoffs.
I'm happy about it.
Vegas is saying it's 50-50 whether they make the playoffs.
Vegas
if they don't make
lot,
the playoffs,
guys.
Can I just do my reaction?
That's a good one.
Oh, God. We're going to be seeing more of that.
Do I get to see that?
Right on cue. Very nice.
No mercy. James Harden. has been on fire this year, scoring at least 30 points in 31 straight games. So it's no surprise that he's the favorite to be the MVP. Harden is followed by the Greek Freak, who has led the Bucks to the best record in the NBA, and Paul George, who is having a career year, averaging nearly 29 points a game. We're joined once again by Chris Broussard. Chris, right now, who is your MVP?
I have those three as my top three, but in a different order. I'm going with Giannis Antetokounmpo. I was with Harden up until a few weeks ago, but now I'm going with Giannis. Giannis, first of all, his numbers, Skip, are out of this world. 27 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists a game on 58% shooting. I mean, this dude statistically is off the charts, and he gets it done down the stretch. He's third in the league in fourth quarter scoring. That's big. He plays defense unlike James Harden. He's 15th in the league in real plus minus on the defensive end. So he uses that length and athleticism to not just play one end of the floor. And because of him, largely, Milwaukee is the only team in the NBA that is in the top five in offensive and defensive efficiency. Milwaukee has the best record in the league. Yep. They have the best road record in the league. They have the best point differential in the league, which usually is a good barometer to measure future playoff success. Giannis has been just spectacular in every way. He doesn't shoot three-pointers, but he doesn't really need to. When I look at James Harden, I was with him, like I said, up to a few weeks ago while the Rockets were winning. And they were winning at an impressive pace during his first part of his 30-game, 30-point streak. But they've cooled off significantly. They're 11-9 in the last 20 games. And since Chris Paul's come back, they're 4-4. And the reason is because they're still playing like all Harden all the time, even though CP3 is back. They're making CP3 a role player. And I know he's not quite what he's used to be, but still, he's still a very good player, and they need to get more in line with the way they played last year, where it was more of a two-headed monster instead of just Harden doing everything, because now it's starting to catch up with them, and they're not going to win at a high level anymore if they keep playing kind of this one-man band type of basketball. So I'm going with Giannis. Another thing in his factor in his that helps him, Skip, and I don't know if you're going Paul George, but Paul George has another star, I would say even superstar on his team in Russell Westbrook. Typically, whether it's right or wrong, that's always worked against guys. We saw it with Kobe and Shaq. Kobe and Shaq combined have two MVPs. Steve Nash has two himself. It's because they kind of canceled each other out. And we can criticize Westbrook all we want for his shooting percentage, his free throw percentage, all that. He's still averaging a triple-double, playing good defense. And Giannis does not have another star. I know Chris Middleton made the All-Star team. He's a nice little player. But there's no perennial star next to Giannis Antetokounmpo. So he's number one right now for me, Skip.
So, as usual, Mr. Broussard, you made some decent basketball points. I'll give you decent points.
But did I'm gonna I just make... kill your Paul George argument already?
No, you didn't. I'm just going to make better points about Paul George. And the irony of what I'm about to say is those who have watched this show faithfully and loyally over the last 2.5 years know I have often been very hard on Paul George on this show. I have called him often George Paul, as in just that guy at Indiana, that LeBron wannabe who just genuflects in the presence of LeBron James, as in melting and saying, I'm not worthy. I try and I fail to be a poor man's LeBron James. All that has changed. All that is out the window. Yet all that is why I am now driving the Paul George bandwagon toward MVP. And I believe he's going to catch James and catch Giannis and close with a rush and win Defensive Player of the Year as well as MVP, because what he is doing in spite of Russell Westbrook is just extraordinary and off the charts for me. Again, Paul George is igniting one of the best defenses in pro basketball. I give you, Milwaukee is at the top. They're really good on defense, but so is Oklahoma City without their best defensive player, Andre Roberson, who's still out. And I don't know what his MO is or what's – they're not even talking about him coming back this year. But Paul George has filled that void. Paul George ignites that team on the defensive end even more than on the offensive end, where he has been spectacular. He leads, Paul George, the league in steals. Mm. He leads in so many other categories and deflections and various other things that add up to this team is dramatically improved on the defensive end only because of him. And on the offensive end, again, Giannis doesn't shoot many threes. He's not a three-point shooter. But the three-point shot is just so much more dramatic. It has so much more impact. And guess what? Paul George averages 10 a game, 10 attempts a game. He's taken 537 on the year. He's made 41% of them. I watch Oklahoma City every night. I'm addicted.
Yep.
Because I sit back in awe of his late-game clutch three-point shooting. It seems like on a nightly basis, Paul George takes over the game in the fourth quarter shooting threes. And he's in such on such a roll with such tempo and rhythm. Chris, if you watch him, it's like he swishes every one of them. When they leave his hand, I'm like, that's good. Shoots them with arc, rhythm, tempo, and he is taking over the team, and he has won the trust of one Russell Westbrook in ways, obviously, Kevin Durant never was able to. I don't know why. Maybe Russ has grown up. Maybe he's matured. But the truth is, Paul George is carrying Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook has been atrocious shooting the basketball. He's only making 42% of his shots from the field. That's horrendously bad. He's 25% from three. He's 66% from the free throw line. It's like you have to overcome that on a nightly basis. And guess what's happened since January 19th? Oklahoma City is tied with Milwaukee for the best record in basketball since then, since January the 19th. And Oklahoma City is the number one scoring team since January the 19th, 122 points a game, because of Paul George. What he's doing is staggering to me, because he has suddenly turned that team into his team. He's now taken 206 more shots than Russell Westbrook. When would that have ever happened with Kevin Durant? It just didn't, because they were vying. They were competing for who got to shoot the ball the most. So he's won Russ's trust. He's won the coach's staff's trust. He's taken over Oklahoma City. He stayed there for a reason, because I think he didn't want to share the stage with LeBron, and I don't think he wanted to be on as big a stage as the Staples Center stage is in his home area here in Southern California. He's obviously from Palmdale. But he loves Oklahoma City. He's comfortable playing alongside Russell Westbrook. And now the irony of this whole discussion is Russell Westbrook is actually playing alongside of Paul George. That has MVP written all over it, and I think people over the last 25 games will see the light and see that Paul George has finally arrived as a bona fide superstar in the NBA. Thank you very much, and way to go, Paul George.
George, look, he's been great. He has been OKC's best player offensively and defensively, but I would disagree on this point. Russell Westbrook is the engine, not the best player on offense, but the engine. If you watch him every night, you said, you see that Westbrook is getting different types of assists now. He is looking for
it.
Other guys. He's passing up open shots,
no,
right?
He does.
And finding the open man rather than going up himself to shoot. Oh, I can't shoot. Let me pass it and get an assist. And I think, look, Paul George, Steve Adams, Jeremy Grant and Dennis Schroeder are all having career years offensively. I think a big reason is Russ. I want to hear from you, Skip. What's the argument? George has been great. I agree he's been great. But what's the argument against Giannis? Has he been better than Giannis?
He has, because Giannis, it's his team. He's the solo star. I know Chris Middleton made the All-Star team. I'm not sure how. But again, he played great in the All-Star game. I give you that. But that's Giannis's team. Every night he gets to do whatever he wants to do. Paul had to figure out how to ingratiate himself with Russell Westbrook. And I got to tell you, I watch these games. I don't know if you can see me right now, Chris, but I watch them like this when I'm watching Russ. Like, oh, what's he going to do this time? I don't know. Is he going to throw it in the seventh row or the ninth row?
I don't know. He's going to get a triple-double. That's what
he's
going to do.
Well, he does, but they're Jason Kidd Memorial triple-doubles. Now he scores 13, 10, and 10, right? Because he shoots 6 for 29 from the field and he scored 13 points, you know?
Oh, Skip, we don't want you watching games
Skip,
like that.
Skip, you've convinced me that Paul George is number two.
Number two.
I move him ahead of Harden, maybe.
I made progress.
But Giannis is still number one.
We've still got 25 big games left. Let's see how it plays out.
We made some progress. No mercy. Zion Williamson is the talk of college basketball, and he'll be a big focus tonight against Duke's biggest rival, North Carolina. Zion is averaging about 22 points, 9 rebounds per game, and he's a huge favorite to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. Roy Williams said earlier this week that Zion has, quote, a combination of skills that I've never seen before. And we're now joined in New York by FS1 NBA analyst Chris Broussard. Good morning, Chris. When you look at what you're seeing from Zion, will he become a superstar in the NBA?
Zion, look, I've heard him compared to LeBron James. I think that's far too high of a ceiling or praise to give him. LeBron, you're talking about a top five player of all time. I don't think Zion becomes that. But I think he's like a new age Charles Barkley. He's Charles Barkley with the skills that you need to translate to today's NBA game. Skip, I think this kid has the tangibles, obviously athletically, and the intangibles to be a great player. I think he'll be a superstar and a franchise-changing player. First of all, let's go at his tangibles. Obviously, he's got the athleticism. He rebounds the basketball. He handles it pretty well. He passes pretty well. And in today's NBA, because the floor is so spread out, it's easier than ever to get into the paint. So I think he'll be able to get into the paint. And with his strength, his build, and his athleticism, I think he'll be able to finish over bigger players, even though he's only probably 6'6" tall. So I think he'll be fine in that regard. And then you look at his shot, which is the one criticism a lot of people would have of him. His shot isn't broken. I'm not saying he's a great outside shooter, but you look at his form, you look at his percentage, which is okay. He actually can shoot the ball fairly well. And when you look in the NBA today, Blake Griffin, even going back, a Jason Kidd, they developed into good three-point shooters. And if they can do it with shots that were far worse than Zion Williamson at this point, I'm convinced he'll be able to do it. That leads me to the intangibles. He's a hard worker. He plays defense. At this stage of most guys' careers, even LeBron didn't play defense early in his NBA career or in high school. So Zion has that. He hustles. He dives for the ball. Like, he's not one of these prima donnas that's just, playing, resting on his laurels and not hustling because he's such a great player, a great talent, and a guy that's going to go one or two in the NBA draft. So I think that combination of tangibles and those intangibles will lead him to work on his deficiencies, his jump shot. I'm convinced, Skip, that this guy not only will be the number one pick, because I've yet to talk to an NBA executive who's told me he won't be the number one pick, but I think he'll become a franchise-changing player. But I'm not putting him on LeBron's level, but he'll be a superstar.
So, Chris, here's my issue. I can't be completely sold on Zion Williamson being a dominating NBA player, being in that category of a LeBron or a KD or even a Harden or a Russ, even though obviously he plays a different position. The guy who will carry a franchise to multiple championships, in part because I haven't seen enough yet. And I'm going to warn you that this draft from top to bottom doesn't look very strong to me. It's strong at the very top, so it's top heavy, but top to bottom all the way through the second round, I think this is a mediocre year at best in college basketball. So I'm going to warn everybody out there that obviously the second pick in the draft plays alongside Zion right now, R.J. Barrett at Duke. So does that help Zion? Does that mislead you a little bit? Because R.J. Barrett's really good. He's a slasher. He's got more of a scorer's mentality than Zion does. He's slightly above Zion in scoring average. He's taken a bunch more. I think he's taken 143 more shots than Zion has. Yeah. And he's leading the ACC in scoring, obviously. And not to mention that maybe the fourth or fifth pick in this draft plays for Duke in Cam Reddish, who hit a big shot to win the game at Florida State, a big three. So he's turned into their closing clutch shooter. Not to mention that the best point guard in all of college basketball, to my eye, I'm just going on my eye test, plays for Duke. It's Trey Jones. So he is the guy setting up both those guys in the post, in the paint. And are we being slightly misled by that? Maybe so. So I'm here to say I'm already a little more sold on Kyler Murray being a star quarterback than I am on Zion at this point being a dominating NBA superstar, because I got to see Kyler in the Big 12 championship game against Texas at Jerry World. I got to see Kyler against Alabama in the national semifinal in the Orange Bowl. I saw it, and I bought it, and I believe in it, and I trust it. But I do need – I'm going to withhold a little bit today because I need to see a little bit more of Zion. – Maybe, again, this is at Duke tonight. Carolina's at Duke, but they're going to play at Carolina on March the 9th. I'd like to see that game, see what happens. I'd like to see the ACC tourney. I'd like to see the NCAAs, especially the Final Four. If, in fact, Duke gets that far, I want to see the semifinal, and I want to see Zion in the final take over games. And I know this is a small sample size, but I've watched a lot of Duke this year. They did lose in the Maui Classic. This is way back in December. They lost to Gonzaga. Gonzaga's pretty good, but that was a weird game to me because it was a very close game late. And Zion did hit a big jumper, like a little mid-range soft jump shot. And he is he's as sensational a combination of power and touch as I've ever seen in college basketball so far, from what I've seen. Again, as far as power leaping goes, quick leaping, I've never seen anything like the combination of tonnage and lift that this kid has. And he's such a quick jumper, but he did make a little jump shot, and that tied the score. And then over the last minute, Zion didn't touch the basketball, and RJ just took the game over, but he didn't close the game because he took five shots in the last minute and missed all five of them. So RJ's got that dog in him. He's that killer. He's got that makeup, just give me the ball and get out of my way. Zion's a sweet kid. He's a good kid. He's a great interview. He's great with the media. The stage is never too big for him. He never seems to feel any real pressure because he's got the LeBron syndrome going. Since he was 14, everybody saw him coming as the next it kid. And so he knows what that feels like. And yet, I don't know if that sweet personality translates in the NBA into that cold-blooded assassin. Is he that guy? I haven't seen that guy yet. I see all the tangibles. I'm not sure about the intangibles. And Chris, I'm not completely sold at, remember, we got tweener height going on. I'm pretty sure he won't measure above 6'6". So, again,
I'd agree.
Okay, will the leaping take over that? You know, will it eclipse his height? Will it render it obsolete? It's sort of like Kyler Murray. He is so quick and so fast that 5'9 doesn't matter anymore because he can buy time. He can create throwing lanes. Well, can Zion overcome 6'6 in the NBA just because of his power leaping? Maybe, because Charles Barkley did in certain ways and could throw his weight around and create space under the basket. I'll give you all that. And Zion's about 285 maybe. So will he have a weight problem in the NBA? It seems like he's keeping his weight pretty much under control at Duke. Will the tonnage start to wear on his body? Because he is going way up and coming way down with 285 pounds worth of contact, you know, on the floor, not to mention body contact. So I don't know how he's going to, if he'll wear well in the NBA, how his durability will be. I like everything I see, but I haven't seen enough. And it leads me to my last point, which is the shot. It's okay, but it's not great. He's tried some threes. He's kind of backed off the threes, but he's taken 14. I mean, sorry, he's made 14 this year out of 48. That's 29%. Can that get a little better? He doesn't have to shoot threes because Giannis doesn't shoot a lot of threes, obviously. But he probably at 6'6 needs to create a little more of a jump shot. Can he teach himself that the way Magic and Michael taught themselves to shoot? Maybe, maybe. But I haven't seen quite enough. And I'm still fearful that we're all getting a little too swept up in what works on social media, and that is highlights.
Yep.
Dunks, sensational dunks. If he enters the dunk contest next year, the NBA dunk contest, the All-Star weekend dunk contest, nobody else should enter because he's just going to win it going away. We should just watch him do three or four dunks and call it a night because he will immediately be the most sensational dunker in the league. Does all that add up to KD LeBron? I don't see that yet. I'm withholding that. I think we're all getting a little swept up in highlights as opposed to scoreboard. And again, he's playing on by far the best team right now, which could camouflage some of the weaknesses. So I'm waiting and seeing on this one, and I'm looking forward to tonight. This will be an interesting test.
It'll be interesting. You brought up KD LeBron. Like, he's getting so much hype.
He is.
Like, usually, even the great young players, they get a, I don't know, four-year honeymoon period or so where as long as they establish themselves individually, they put up great numbers, they look like an all-star, they maybe make it a couple all-star teams early on and establish themselves as a superstar, that's all we want. We're not really looking at wins. LeBron didn't make the playoffs his first 2 years. You know, nobody held it against him. A few years ago, Karl Anthony Towns was, everybody loved him. Now, finally, you're starting to say, okay, is he going to start winning?
Yep.
You know, so I think, I don't know if Zion with the extra hype, people will start saying he's got to win immediately. I don't see that. I don't see him going to Cleveland or New York if nobody else goes there and immediately making them a great team or a very good team. I don't think he's going to win in that situation right away, but I do think he'll establish himself individually as a great player.
Well, Chris, you bring up the hype, and you know how much tickets are going for? Today, check this morning, $3,600 to get in the door tonight. President Obama might be there.
Oh, good, but there aren't many seats to be had in that little arena.
Yeah, I mean, those are Super Bowl prices. The hype is real for this guy. All right, Chris, thanks.
No mercy.
Thanks for listening to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm Jenny Taft. Join us again same time tomorrow morning, 9:30 Eastern. See you then.
Facts, sports, one of one.